Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. You have joined me for another of our Instructional Coaching Done Well Roadshow mini episodes. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be in conversation once again with Dr. Jim Knight, author, researcher, and co-founder of the Instructional Coaching Group. For many people around the world, Jim's work has shaped how we think about coaching in schools. And at the heart of that work sits today's topic of discussion, the partnership principles. These seven principles, equality, choice, voice, dialogue, praxis, reflection, and reciprocity, offer not just a framework for coaching, but a way of being in relationship with others. They help us think deeply about what it means to honour the humanity, autonomy, and potential of the people we work with every day. In this conversation, we explore where the partnership principles come from, what they look like in action, and how they shape not only our coaching conversations, but also the culture of our schools and organizations. Jim, it's a privilege to have you join me once again on the podcast today.
Great to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Looking forward to it too, Jim. One of the things I love about the partnership principles is that they're not just techniques or tools. They reflect a deeply human way of working with people. Can you share with us a little about where these principles came from and maybe a little bit around the research, what it told you about how people learn and grow best?
Well, they grew out of the fact that my professional development wasn't very good. And I would show up and do training and I'd tell people, you have to do it the way I say. And they wouldn't. And it wasn't really effective. And the room didn't feel great. I could just felt a sort of, I don't know, unpleasantness in the relationships. So I was studying with Michael Fullan at the University of Toronto, and he gave me a lot of different people to read, Peter Senge and Peter Block and Margaret Wheatley and others. And as I was reading them, I came to the conclusion, particularly Peter Block, I came to the conclusion that telling people what to do and expecting them to do it is probably not the best way to go. So I read really widely. I read in philosophy of science and organizational behavior, organizational development, cultural anthropology, educational theory. And I kept seeing the same key elements over and over again in these people who talk about how to share ideas in a sort of what I would call a mutually humanizing way. People like Rhian Eisler, Peter Block, who I mentioned, but also a book that really influenced me was R.J. Bernstein's book, Beyond Objectivism and Relativism, and a bunch of other authors. So that's where they came from. And then I ended up studying them for my dissertation when I did my doctorate back in the 90s, before you were born, Richard. And so what I did is I compared, controlled for all the variables, and then I compared workshops where they were grounded in the partnership principles and when they weren't. And what I found was, people were more engaged. They enjoyed themselves more. They learned more. And maybe most important from my perspective, they were way more likely to implement what they learned from the partnership approach. 4.5 times more likely to do it. I think it was 59-13 or 58-13, something like that. So I felt pretty confident saying that when you take the partnership approach, people are more likely to embrace what you share.
Yeah. Very much about impact. Because you talked about those initial professional development days, people just weren't simply doing what you asked them to do, even though content was fantastic, but the impact wasn't there. And yes, back in the 90s, Jim, I was literally just finishing school and you were reading these books. So again, you know, it shows the longevity, I suppose, of the research that's gone into the partnership principles. You describe the partnership principles in many ways as a way of being, not just a method, but a mindset. So what does it actually look like in practice? So say for a leader or maybe a coach working in a school.
Well, I would say a way of being is just a variation on the word be. So is and am and was and were, you know, all the different ways of being. And so the partnership approach or any way of being is who I am when I interact with other people. The way in which I sort of walk through the world, the way I interact with other people. And if someone looks at someone, everybody has a way of being, and you might say, well, that person is, and you complete the blank, and that would be the way of being. And that's, I think it's been around since Carl Rogers, this idea of talking about the way you present yourself, the way you, not so much present yourself, but more the way you are. Present yourself sounds like it's a something you craft, but really your way of being is who you are to the core. That's the way I put it.
Yeah. So if we think about these seven principles, and again, you've written about these extensively, you've read around them extensively. Could you maybe just walk us through, you know, each of the seven principles? We have equality, choice, voice, dialogue, praxis, reflection, and reciprocity. I'd love to hear, you know, for each one, just a little bit about what it looks like in action, and maybe one or two, maybe a story or an example from your work that I suppose really brings it to life for listeners.
Yeah, so maybe what we'll do is we'll just go through them really quickly, and then we'll come back and revisit them in a slightly different way. So equality, sometimes people have issues with the word equality because they think it means we treat everybody the same. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I'm not better than the other person. I'm not up here and they're down here. I'm not a parent talking to a child. We're two professionals engaged in a conversation. And I'm not trying to control them. And I don't think I'm better than them. I see us as two autonomous human beings interacting in a professional discourse. So to me, equality is not thinking I'm better than the other person. In fact, when it comes to coaching, as Dan Pink says, I like to sit in the little chair and let the other person sit in the big chair. If anybody should have more status, it should be the person I'm coaching, not me. That would be the equality part. Choice starts with the fact, not opinion, that people only do what they choose to do. So I can say what I want, and they might do it because they're afraid, or they might do it out of compliance or out of respect, and they might not like what they're doing, but nothing happens until you say, yes, I'm going to do it. And so part of choice is acknowledging the fact that people only do what they choose to do, so I want to make it safe for them to tell me what they're thinking. I want them to be able to tell me about their choices. And children and adults are really good at nodding their head yes and doing nothing. And so I want to make sure they're okay telling me what they're thinking. And then part of choice is just that without choice, you don't get a lot of implementation. You don't get a lot of commitment. Brian Goodwin says, I don't really want other people to pick my New Year's resolutions for me. And so choice is I'm letting this person choose. Now, that doesn't mean that everything's a choice and everything's up for grabs. In any system, there are things you have to do. There's things that are not a choice at all. You know, you can't say, I'd like to start teaching at noon every day. Probably not going to happen in most situations. And there's things you have to do. And so there's simple questions. And one of the questions would be with choice is, am I able to let go of control and let that person make their own choices? Voice, the question for voice would be, do other people know that I think their opinion matters? And there's lots of people who've written about the importance of it. Gallup did a survey of over 1 million people and found that one of the most important things in work is to feel like your opinion matters. So voice is letting other people know that I think their opinion matters, because I do. It's an authentic thing. I really want to hear what the person has to say. Well, the fourth principle is dialogue. They aren't necessarily in a numerical order, but the fourth one that comes to mind is dialogue. And dialogue is meaning flowing back and forth between two people. And so a dialogue is grounded in a few conditions. One of them is, I want to hear what you have to say. I'm open to letting it change me. So I approach a person with humility. The second one is, I really believe in you. You know, when I watch Claudia Oad coach, what strikes me about her coaching is she just communicates to the person, you've got this. I know you can do this. She doesn't even do it so much in words. It's just about her. It's her whole way of being. She communicates that she believes in the person. And then the third thing is it's an attitude of benevolence. And when you have those three things, humility, faith in the other person, and benevolence or love, humility, faith, and love, then trust is naturally going to follow. What erodes trust, at least based on my experience and the many books I've read that talk about trust, is self-interest. We have a hard time trusting somebody when it's all about them. It's easier to trust somebody when benevolence is placed. And so dialogue, that flowing back and forth, it occurs more often when we're open to hearing their opinion. We communicate that we believe in you. We communicate that this is about you. I'm here to act in a way that's beneficial to you. And then reflection. The challenge with reflection is we have an impulse to tell people what to do, to give advice. It's really, really hard, especially when you're first starting coaching. You just have to like sit on your hands, figuratively speaking. You want to get in there and say, look, I know I'm not supposed to give advice, but just this one time, I'd like to tell you what you need to do. And But what that does is it means you're doing the thinking for the other person. You're not giving them the chance to do the thinking. And so reflection, as Michael Bungay Stanier and others have said, but especially Michael, it's about controlling your advice monster, that temptation to give advice. Because coaching is about now, but it's about not yet. And if I solve your problem now, and I do the fixing for you, I inhibit your ability to solve your problem later on. It makes much more sense for us to do it together in partnership. And then the next principle is a funny word, praxis. It's been around since Aristotle. But and there are many different definitions. It's been used by different people in different ways. But for me, it simply means learning is grounded in real life action, which is, I think, the original meaning of Aristotle. So I'm not learning about questions in the abstract. I'm learning about questions for tomorrow's class because I've got 7 kids who are not responding to questions. So I'm changing my questioning. I could sit in a workshop and hear about it in the summer and think about doing it next year, or I could be focused on tomorrow. And praxis is learning that's grounded in real life. You know, it's kind of like when you teach a novel, if you're an English teacher, after you teach the novel or when you're teaching the novel, your knowledge of it goes so much deeper than when you just read the novel. Even though you might be a great reader and you read it for pleasure, when you read it to teach it, it's a whole different level. And that's kind of what that idea of praxis is. And then the last idea, reciprocity, that's just the idea that I think I can learn from every person I know. There's an author named Brad Statz. He's a dean of business at Duke University. He wrote a book called Never Stop Learning. And he talked about meeting this person who was the smartest person he knew. And he said to him, he said, you know, when you walk into a room, you must know you're the smartest person in the room. But every time you walk into a room, you start asking people questions and listening to them and talking to them. So why do you do that? You're smarter than them. And that person, he doesn't name who it is, but the person responds, he says, I believe everybody has something important to teach me. And so when I meet them, I want to find out what I can learn from them. And that's the principle of reciprocity. The old saying is, when one teaches, two learn. So one way to think about those principles is, what's the opposite of those principles? So there's a quality, or there's the idea that I think I'm better than you, and I'm going to treat you like a parent and you're the child. There's choice, or I'm going to try to control you and get you to do what I think you need to do. There's voice, or actually, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I don't care what you have to say. There's dialogue, which is grounded in humility, faith, and love. Or there's a conversation where it's all about me, and I don't actually care about your opinion, and I don't believe in you either. And then reflection is, I'm going to solve your problem for you. I'm going to give you advice. I don't really care what you think. I'm going to tell you what to do. Praxis is abstract, impractical ideas we can't use. And reciprocity is, I don't think you've got anything to teach me. I don't want to learn from you. When you flip it around, the power of the principles become pretty clear.
Yeah. I think that's a very helpful way of looking at it, Jim, is when you look at the opposite of the principles. And in many ways, and when we go back to that 90s thing again, you've spent decades working with schools around the world. When you think about those schools you work with, many, many, many different schools, what tends to be the thing that gets in the way of people living out those partnership? I mean, are there specific mindsets or maybe even habits that you see in schools that coaches really need to unlearn in order to really embrace them? Any thoughts on that?
Well, that's a great question. There's quite a few things, Richard. I would say one of the big things is people think that either you tell people what to do or you don't tell people anything. And they think the only option for coaching is, I'm not going to share any of my expertise. But we feel the partnership approach gives you a way to share your expertise in a more effective way, because just telling people what to do is probably not going to be embraced. And it's solving the problem for the other person. It inhibits their learning. So you can share ideas in a way that's grounded in the partnership principles. I don't think it makes any sense if I have information that can help a person think better and solve their problem more effectively for me just to hold on to it. But it becomes a problem when I violate that idea of partnership, when I tell people, let me fix your problem for you. Because then what I do is I own the solution. And then when that person tries it out, they're not that committed to it because it's my solution. And they come back and they say 6 weeks later, hey, I did that thing you said, it didn't work, because they don't own it. But the partnership approach, honoring them as a professional who makes choices, I can share my ideas, but I still want them to be the one that makes the choice, because the truth is they are the ones that makes the choice. So I'd say that's one big thing. A second thing is people, for whatever reason, don't go the distance often. They want a quick fix. But as Peter Senge said, you know, decades ago in the fifth discipline, quick fixes just make things worse. They actually slow the process down because they erode people's commitment to change, because they keep trying a quick fix and the problem doesn't go away. But the trouble with the fundamental solution is it takes a while to get there. There's a delay in the process. And so people are unwilling to wait through the delay to get to the fundamental solution. So they keep doing quick fixes, making things worse rather than better.
Yeah. I think when you mentioned that, particularly that second point you make, Jim, is really, really helpful in that, to me, what I'm hearing is it's very much partnership's an ongoing relationship. You know, it's very much this balance between the two people. And I would imagine you don't get it right at the start. I would imagine it takes a bit of give and take on both parties, from both the coach and the teacher. But it is that idea of an ongoing relationship. And very much you've written down here, time and commitment over a period of time to really get that balance, that partnership, to get it right. I'm curious about the whole area of impact, because I mean, right back from the very start, you'd mentioned the word impact, thinking about those initial workshops that you were running and they weren't having enough impact, certainly in the longer term. So I'm curious, you know, what happens in your experience when these principles really start to shape the culture of coaching conversations? So maybe a leadership team or maybe even a whole school, what kinds of shifts do you see?
Well, I don't think it's just the partnership principles. I think it's really four categories of things. So one area is your way of being. One area is your coaching skills, the way you ask questions and listen. You could have a partnership way of being, but you could still be a terrible questioner. And, you know, it's a learned skill, but it's a skill you have to learn. One thing is to have a process to use, a coaching cycle to work through, a conversational framework, so you don't just spin your wheels all the time. And then the fourth thing is expertise. An instructional coach, as opposed to maybe other kinds of coaches, but they need to understand what effective instruction looks like, and they need to understand how to gather data, because the data helps them see what's happening. It helps them set goals, helps them monitor progress. And what distinguishes an instructional coach from another kind of coach is that they have that expertise, but they share the expertise only when it's helpful. And they don't just share it to share it. They say, this seems like a situation where I could share it. And they share it in a partnership way, which is they don't say, look, I've fixed your problem for you. They say, well, do you mind if I share a few things I've seen other people do and you tell me what you think? They see the other person as an equal, fully capable of making decisions about what they're supposed to do. And if you don't do that, you're going to create people who aren't capable of doing that, because they pretty quickly will say, well, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. So I would say impact, that is unmistakably positive changes in the quality of kids' lives, whether we're talking about learning or engagement or well-being, impact requires those four things: a way of being, a coaching process, skills, and then expertise.
I think that's helpful, being able to show how you weave those things together. You know, they're not standalones. And for folks who are listening, it's important to think about each of those four different areas. So when we think about leaders or coaches who are listening to this podcast right now, and they're thinking to themselves, do you know something, this really is something that I want for my school, where might they begin? What are some of the practical first steps to start creating those conditions for the partnership principles to take root?
Well, you have to learn more about them, I'd say. And there are a lot of free things online on instructionalcoaching.com. If you go to instructionalcoaching.com and you poke around in the resources section, you can find stuff. There's probably the most up-to-date writing about it is in The Definitive Guide to Instructional Coaching. So you could look at that book. There's a UK version and there's a North American version. So lots of which you can buy in Australia and New Zealand. So I would say, and that's really the text for our time together. I think the second thing is, you know, to walk the talk yourself, to ask yourself, how well am I doing with respect to leading this? And really take time to reflect on, can I let go of control? And can I not give advice? And then to monitor what's happening. And that's why I think a little knowledge is important, because it's not a quick thing. You want to understand the principles, and you want to monitor, how is this changing the nature of my conversations? When the partnership principles are, embraced in conversations more often than not. Now, people come with their own baggage, their own perceptions. They may not see what you're doing, but more often than not, I'd say you're going to have something closer to a life-giving conversation. You might say, what's a life-giving conversation? Well, if you ever had a conversation that sucked the life right out of you, it's the opposite of that. It's one that gives you life, not takes it away. So I think when you work from the partnership principles, that's more likely going to be the case. And the only way to know for sure is to try it out for yourself, whether you're talking with your partner or your colleagues at work or even children, whomever it is, to sort of experiment with these principles to see how they play out for you.
Very helpful advice. Finally, Jim, and I'm genuinely looking forward to asking this question. You've said that the principles describe both the person we are and the person we want to be. How have the partnership principles shaped you over the years? Well, not just as a coach or a researcher, but actually as a person.
Not enough. You know, I think as a coach, I can settle in and, you know, I've learned how to interact in a way that honors the capacity of that person to interact as a professional. And same thing as a professional developer, when I share ideas in workshops, I'm at peace with, and sometimes it makes it easier because I just say, well, we don't agree, but you know, if it's working for you, keep doing it. I don't have to get into a big conversation. It's not going to go anywhere. And often that softens the conversation. But I think coaching and presenting, it's become a kind of a habitual way of practice, but the most important conversations aren't the coaching conversations and the presenting conversations. You know, they're the ones with the people that are closest to you. And, you know, there's always room for improvement there. You know, I think sometimes, just two quick thoughts, sometimes the people that matter the most get the least attention. That's one thing. But I think also, you know, I'll just speak for myself. I can always get better at engaging my will for the good of others. You know, it's sometimes I'm not as great at truly being benevolent towards anybody. You know, I think especially when you're short of time, when you're hurrying, feel pressure, but I'll say I'm not as bad as I used to be. So there's a lot of room for improvement, but I feel I've made some gains and growth. And I would say I have a vocabulary for understanding what works and what doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, I can often go back and see, I should have done this, you know, so that's helpful.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be helpful for our listeners. It's definitely helpful to me, Jim, listening to you say that. We're very much a work in progress. And I think that's what we're trying to get across. You know, through all of the podcast and through all of the work that we're doing, we are all a work in progress, regardless of what role we're in. And I think that's an encouraging thing. Folks, there you have it. What a joy it has been to learn a little bit more about the partnership principles. Not simply a set of coaching skills, but a way of seeing and being with people. This has served for me and for our listeners as a reminder that real partnership isn't about fixing or directing others. It's about creating the conditions for learning, growth, and dialogue to flourish. If you'd like to learn more about Jim's work on the partnership principles, you can find a wealth of resources, as Jim said, instructionalcoaching.com. And again, if you're listening in Australia and you'd like to attend one of the three Instructional Coaching Done Well roadshows, please check out growthcoaching.com.au for more information. And I look forward to joining you all on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.